Welcome to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast with WHIO meteorologist McCall Rydags and Kirsty Zontini, brought to you by Jermaine Ford in Beaver Creek. Remember, you can listen to Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast anytime you want on Apple iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and WHIO.com.
Hey, McCall.
Hey, Kirsty.
We're outside today.
Yeah, it's a nice warm day in the Miami Valley, and it's hard to believe with temperatures into the 90s this afternoon that it's the second day of October.
It is, yeah. So October 2nd, if you're listening to this, this is the stretch of heat that we have had since really September ended up being the hottest on record for us, and we're going to finally get back to fall weather.
Yeah, but sadly, because of the hot temperatures that we've had, we're in a moderate drought in most areas in the Miami Valley, that it's causing some issues as we move into the fall color season.
Exactly, yeah. So I feel like when October hits, everyone's like, okay, it's fall. I want to start to see the leaves change. I want to see beautiful colors. And we know in Ohio, our weather plays a part. Mm-hmm. But there's also just a lot of things every single season that will play a part into why the trees will change colors and drop their leaves. And so we, of course, needed to get an expert. We could talk about the weather part, but we need an expert with us today that's going to talk a lot more about how the weather will impact our trees and our fall color this year. So we're going to join him.
Yeah.
We have Ohio Department of Natural Resources. This is Tyler Stevenson. And Tyler's actually a repeat guest. So if you're a fan of Cloudy with a Chance of Podcast, you may have seen and heard him last year. And welcome back, because last year we were wearing jackets.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing me back on such a beautiful summer day.
Exactly. We're sweating a little bit today, but I'll take it. This has been quite an interesting year. Just Ohio weather-wise, we went from a really wet winter into a wet spring into a drought and a hot summer.
Yeah.
And how does that, and now we all have to see how that'll play a part into fall.
Yeah, and that dry summer and drought definitely pushed back the timing of the fall color, and this warm weather absolutely affects it. Just you can see leaves falling right now, but regardless of that weather and what's happening right now, you know, as the temperature starts to drop in the evening and we keep bright sunny days, the fall color will come out. And no matter where you are in Ohio, you can find pockets of beautiful fall color. So just because you're seeing some trees with brown leaves and leaves dropping off, that Don't be afraid to get
don't
out
panic.
There. Yeah, don't panic.
Don't panic.
Get out there and go see some fall color, because it's out there. You just got to go to the right places. A lot of people see fall color just, you know, out their backyard, out their window from their yard. Some of the best places are out in our natural areas, our state forests, our state parks, our natural preserves. And that's because they have the deep soils that, I mean, the trees have stores of water, and they're able to draw on that. They're not suffering from these dry conditions as much as our urban trees are. And you see a lot of that on those, even the forest edge trees that are subject to the winds and the drying heat from the sun. Mm-hmm. Those start to turn earlier than when you look deeper into the forest and you see that the trees are still green, they're looking great. So just getting out there into the right spots and checking out the fall color is the way to go.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the science of leaves changing color. So chlorophyll is the main reason that the leaves are green.
Correct, yes.
Why do we then see those oranges, reds, and yellows reveal this time of year?
Yeah. So all year we see the chlorophyll. It's the workhorse in the leaves that is producing, taking sunlight energy and producing sugars for the tree to build wood and new leaves in the spring. All year that leaf is loaded with chlorophyll, and it's continually building it up and breaking it down as part of the photosynthetic process. Also in the leaves are carotenoids. There are other pigments, the oranges and the yellows. And as that chlorophyll breaks down, the daylight gets shorter, chlorophyll starts to break down and not get reproduced, the other pigments start to show up. So you start to see those oranges and yellows. The reds and the purples, those actually are another pigment that's formed in the fall. So as like I said, as the daylight changes, the leaves are utilizing those anthocyanins, the reds and the purples, to help protect some of the chlorophyll so that it can continue to take some of the nutrients out of those leaves and store them in their twigs for the next spring.
Nice.
So it's an interesting process, and you can see a lot of that kind of stuff happen on leaves, the top, very top leaves that are exposed to bright sunlight, because that anthocyanin is protecting the chlorophyll. So the leaves that are right there in the bright sunlight, they need that protection more than the leaves down below in the canopy. So you'll see them turn bright red right on mm-hmm. the top first, or a leaf that's shading another leaf, that bottom leaf will be green, the top leaf will be red. So you see that difference in the leaves.
That's super interesting. I'm not sure I fully understood that part really until you just explained it.
So oh, okay, good.
Learning something new every day.
Yeah.
So I think that's important to note that every single year, you know, the days get shorter, the nights will cool down, and that process will begin no matter what.
Absolutely.
Then there are some other variables that I guess can probably determine how long the color season is, how vibrant the colors are.
Yep.
So I guess what is some of the maybe weather phenomena that could impact that kind of thing?
Yeah. So the vibrancy, I mean, the oranges and yellows, like I said, they're always there. They're pretty much going to be the same every year. It's those, the bright oranges, the reds that mix with the yellows, because it's all about, you know, remember back to your primary colors mm-hmm. and how they mix. And so as those, the anthocyanins, they are produced, they're really relying on, you know, moist conditions and having, because it's the sugar that's producing in the leaves from photosynthesis that really brings on the anthocyanins, and having those present in the leaf is important. So mild drought is actually okay for anthocyanin production, but when you get into the more deeper drought and drier summers and drier Septembers and Octobers, you might not have as vibrant of a red. You still will have it, but it, you know, you get some of those
really
black
yeah.
gums and mm-hmm. even dogwoods and ash that have that just bright red sometimes, and it can infect the intensity and the timing is more like what you're talking about with the summer and the drought, that definitely affected when we'll see our peak color. That, like I said, it'll go more probably for this area into early November will be our peak season.
That's pretty exciting for us.
It's a change definitely from years in the past. So
yeah.
The prediction is
right.
Early November.
Hey, yeah, we're all about predictions as meteorologists, so we get it.
But that's great, because
that is pretty cool.
Yeah, normally we're mid to late October. And
yeah.
I know that
yeah.
when we have seasons where it gets cold really fast,
the
colors
quick.
Come a lot sooner because
yeah.
the trees will be shedding their leaves earlier.
Yeah,
but perhaps because we have been warmer and drier later, that makes sense that
yeah,
the color would be a little bit.
Little
I think people
bit.
Are definitely panicking.
Yeah.
Yes, they're
going to
really
miss
nervous.
It.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
And you mentioned it with the temperature, with that anthocyanin is really tied to the cool nights. So the
mm-hmm.
you know, cool nights above freezing, we don't want the freezing
right,
to
that could damage
knock,
the
leaf. Could damage
yeah.
that whole process. But if we have that nice cool night, it's really going to start producing that chemical, and that's when you get that, like you said, when we have those early cool Septembers and cool early cool Octobers, it comes in early, but because it's been so warm, it's just delaying that process.
Well, hey everyone, that is some good news.
That is good
news. Exciting. I also, you kind of mentioned this already, and I do think that this is a kind of a point that most people see in panic. Like we're sitting here and we are on the outer edge of this park that has some deeper trees. And so of course we are starting to see some of the trees, at least right around here, shedding the leaves, or they just kind of went brown and that, like the tree that we're sitting next to. What is the tree we're sitting next to? I know if you're watching us, you'll be able to see this, but if not, explain this tree.
This is a London plane tree. It's not actually a native to Ohio, but the sycamore is, which is in the same genus as it. This is a Platanus genus. And it is a hardy urban tree that we plant in urban environments all the time. It's a great street tree, similar to honey locust over here. And we're seeing this turn brown. You got to think about the conditions right here where we're at. This is a pretty heavily used park.
Right.
You look at some of the walkways and areas where people walk, the soils are heavily compacted.
Mm-hmm.
So the moisture in the soils, there's not a good duff layer, that's that layer of decomposing leaf mm-hmm. and
okay.
twig matter. There is virtually nothing here because we mow through here and pick up the leaves. So there's no mulch layer that, you know, you mulch around your trees. That actually keeps moisture in the soil, keeps it from evaporating. So because none of that is here, this tree is under some pretty good stress, yes,
yeah.
water stress. And its reaction is, hey, it's easy, I'll just drop these leaves. Right
and I'm done.
Survive.
I'm done
yeah.
for the season.
Yeah.
Well, and that's similar to what people are seeing in their neighborhoods.
Yeah.
And I think that's
exactly.
what most people are noticing right
nervous.
Now is that their tree in their front yard is dropping
kind of
its leaves.
Out.
Yeah, a little stressed, definitely.
Yeah.
But like I said, it's nothing to be concerned about as far as fall color, because it's out there, particularly in our, like I said, our natural areas. You get out to the state lands, mm-hmm. our state parks, or your metro parks that have some pocketed deep forest areas where they have the deep soils and have retained moisture throughout the year. They're going to have that great fall color.
Yeah, we talked about this, I think, last year, because you mentioned mulch, that there's actually, it's better to have your mulch layer perhaps a bit wider from the tree. Does that help to hold the moisture in a little bit more?
Yeah.
Because I remember being shocked by that, because you always think to put just a small mulch bed around your tree. Yeah. But it's better to have it out to the drip line?
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing. A lot of people think of mulch as like a part of their decoration, part of their landscaping, as far as an aesthetic view of maybe keeping weeds down, things like that. But really, you're just trying, the idea is to mimic forest conditions. You want to recreate that duff layer, that thick layer of organic matter that not only holds in soil moisture, but is also recycling nutrients into the soil. As that woody material breaks down, the trees are utilizing those nutrients and sucking them up and using them in the photosynthesis process and building new wood and new leaves. So mulching out to the drip line is really just trying to recreate that forest condition. And the drip line is the area where the leaves extend out to. You can the roots go out farther than that. You can definitely
mulch your whole front yard.
You can definitely mulch your whole front yard if you think of. But the other thing we had mentioned last year was you don't want to mulch right up to the trunk, because that's
suffocate it, right?
Yeah, it's we call it mulch volcanoes, because it looks like just a volcano right at the trunk. And it's not a good practice, because it's a great environment for pathogens. So fungal pathogens that can grow in there, it's not a good thing. And then there's the potential for girdling roots, which are roots that were already circling potentially from a tree that was in pot bound in the nursery, and it has these roots that are circling. Now the root's going to come up into that mulch layer and circle around and actually girdle the trunk of the tree. So having that mulch up against the trunk is not a good thing. We say 2-3 inches away from the trunk of the tree, and then 2-3 inches out to the drip line deep of mulch is the best way for your tree.
Nice. See, we retain the knowledge that you gave us last year. So another thing that we talk about when we say fall color season, which is exciting because we're kind of delaying the whole 40s, upper 30s for the nights. So that means that we may have that prolonged fall color season, maybe not peaking until end of October, early November. But will that be helpful, because the reason that the leaves fall has to do with the cold, right? We start to get that abscission layer.
Yes, yeah.
And so then we oftentimes get nervous.
Technical term
there. Yeah. We oftentimes get nervous when we start to have the cold nights, because we know, okay, that layer's starting to form, and then it gets rainy and windy and all the leaves fall.
That is definitely
Let's talk about this year, though, because if this whole process is a little bit delayed, we may be seeing the color change. We're not really getting into at least for us, we can see a couple weeks out. We're not getting into super cold nights quite yet.
Yeah.
So would that help if we end up getting maybe a little stormier or windier, that we're not just gonna see all the leaves fall all at once?
Yeah, potentially, because they're still green and holding on to them. Yeah, but I would say, so the length, we had talked about the length of fall color season, that is definitely dependent on not only the temperature, because it's building that abscission layer between the leaf petiole, or the stem of the leaf and the twig. It's building a corky, almost like bark-like layer between those two, because it wants to protect everything back from the leaf during the cold winter.
Right.
And that abscission layer just knocks that leaf right off. So if it's building that up in cold temperatures, and then we get a strong wind or a hard rain, it's going to knock those leaves right off. So we could, I mean, that's the thing.
We could, I know.
You can't tell us 100%?
No, I cannot tell you 100%. What I can tell you is every Wednesday at fallcolor.ohiodnr.gov, we do a fall color update. So we're trying to track this stuff weekly.
Wonderful.
Just like you guys do with your daily. But we'll do a weekly update with a YouTube video that kind of goes through what's happening with the weather, what we see in the trees, where the best fall color is showing up in the state. Obviously, it comes from the north down through the south. But we'll go to different parks throughout the state and different natural areas and interview with naturalists and foresters and park managers and give you the most up-to-date of where you can go and see the best fall color in Ohio.
I think that's great, because I think that this might be a year, McCall, where people need to maybe do a little hiking.
Yes.
You know, it's going to be a good fall season to, like he said, get into some of the deeper parks where you can really see that color last a little
warm
longer.
Enough.
You guys have Houston Woods here. You have John Bryan, Sycamore, Caesar Creek. You got a lot of state parks right around you. And if you want to venture farther into the, you know, the Appalachians of the Ohio, you get out to our, some of our state forests like Shawnee. Mm-hmm. You want to get away from people mm-hmm. and just be with the leaves?
Yeah.
Go head down to Shawnee or Scioto Trail. Or, I mean, if you're into the crowds, you can head over to Hawking and hang out with
yes,
everyone and
I'm
do
a
some
bobcat,
leaf peeping.
So
there
I know,
you go.
I know Hawking Hills. Beautiful,
great,
beautiful
great
place.
Park,
it really
great
is
state
gorgeous.
Forest. We're yes. actually doing another, I mentioned this last year, was our Hawking Forest State Fall Color Tour.
Oh, cool.
And just like last year, I'm blanking on the date, but it is on our website.
That's okay, yeah.
Fallcolor.ohio.com.
We'll put it in the description.
Oh, God, there you go, yeah.
We'll put it in the description
for October, end of October sometime.
Exactly, exactly. Well, we had talked a little bit before we started this podcast because obviously our Memorial Day tornado outbreak was huge.
Yeah.
Devastating, and people are still very much recovering. Of course, we talk about people, but our natural resources in the Miami Valley are also trying to recover, and that does include our trees.
Yeah, I was just in Brookville last week, and I could see in the neighborhood there that was hit in Terrace Park, you know, the trees are just chopped to pieces. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what is the assessment of our trees locally, and what are some good indicators for people that may have a tree in their front lawn and not knowing whether or not they should take it down?
Yeah,
that's a question we get a lot, and we put out some press releases regarding that, and Arbor Day Foundation actually has some good information on after the storm, mm-hmm. what to look for. Your best bet is to hire an ISA certified arborist to come evaluate your tree. A lot of this kind of stuff is a wait and see. You know, you can have a tree that's completely stripped of its leaves, major branches broken off, but the core of the tree, the main central leaders there, and some of the scaffold branches are still there. That tree can fully recover. So a lot of people, you know, will, because, you know, there oftentimes you have damage to your home associated with trees, and their natural reaction is to cut them down.
Right.
But that's definitely not the approach anyone should take, because then you're losing that valuable resource you had next to your home that was shading your home, that was providing beauty for your home, and lots of other ecosystem services that we can get into. But that wait and see approach is I think very important, unless there is some major defect or split or something that to your eyes looks, well, this could
it
be dangerous.
Right. Yeah.
Get a certified arborist there, take a look at it, and maybe they can apply some mitigation to secure that, whether it's bracing or some sort of reduction pruning to make sure that tree can last into the future.
Shop Germain Ford of Beaver Creek, minutes away with an experience miles above, delivering the right car, the right price, the right way to the Miami Valley and beyond. Take advantage of our low-price tire guarantee and extended service hours on Saturday. With same-day appointments and mobile service options available, our goal is to fix your car right the first time, on time, every time. Just off of 35 east of 675, Germain Ford of Beaver Creek.
Have you had an opportunity to go out and see some of the trees that were damaged by the tornadoes?
I have, yeah. I was out within a week of the tornadoes. I went out and checked out a lot of the areas. We were over in Sinclair Park, got called in with some of the other resources from ODNR to see about actually salvaging. I mean, they had a ton of huge white oaks and red oaks and trees just laying on the ground. We were looking at, well, let's not waste this resource. None of that stuff actually panned out. We're still figuring stuff out. But mm-hmm. on top of that, we actually worked with the city of Dayton, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and the city of Beaver Creek, and deployed our Urban Forest Strike Team. And that is
that? Yeah, that's my next question.
Yeah, whoa, like covert operation.
We don't have capes or utility belts. And it's probably a misnomer, but it's based on a lot of the incident command system. We all go through the incident command system, which is what fire and natural disaster response, they all go through that kind of training that FEMA puts on. It was, so the way the Urban Forest Strike Team initiative started was down in the southern states when they had all the major hurricanes running through. There was hurricane after hurricane after mm-hmm. hurricane. The southern state coordinators, my counterparts in the southern states and the state foresters and the U.S. Forest Service, they were seeing a lot of things happening in these communities that they felt if we could intervene, we can help these communities better respond to this. They were seeing trees removed that shouldn't have been removed because, I mean, tree companies get taken up during these. I mean, everyone needs a tree company to come do something. So tree companies come from all over. not all of them have all the training and skills and certifications that they need to properly assess risk and tree health. And so trees that shouldn't have been removed were being removed, therefore reducing canopy in that community later on. Trees that should have been removed weren't being removed, which is a huge public risk.
Right.
Safety, you need to have safety after incidents like that. And then on top of that, the work was being done, and you know, some communities don't understand the process with FEMA to get reimbursed for that disaster work. If you don't collect the data and properly document the work that's being done, FEMA, they're very particular about how that's collected. And if you're not doing it correctly, you might not get the full reimbursement from FEMA. So the idea was let's gather together some certified arborists, urban foresters, third party folks to come in, evaluate your trees, collect the data, and hand that over to the municipality so that they can get the work done properly and potentially get full reimbursement from FEMA for a lot of the storm recovery work.
So has your strike team gone out and assessed a lot of the areas that were impacted by the trees, and how long is the process for determining which trees are healthy and which trees need to come down?
Yeah, and it's more, so the majority of our task specialists that are make up the strike team, they're actually city foresters, urban foresters from other municipalities. So we had, I want to say 30 city foresters from around the state, from as far away as Strongsville and Stowe and Worthington. They all came down here to help out. And that happened in the recovery stages anyway with mutual aid. A lot of communities and our ODOT came and helped out with stuff too. But we're more in the recovery, getting into the late response, early recovery stage of it. And so we bring in these urban foresters and I'm forgetting the question now.
I was saying, where are you guys in the process?
Oh, in the process, yeah. So we came in and assessed. So we set up a command center at the city of Dayton, and we actually did a quick training on the process, because we use tablets with ArcGIS online, and we did a mock disaster in Toledo in 2016. So we all needed a refresher training on what the FEMA guidelines were for collecting this data. So we did a quick half day training, and then we send crews of two out into the field, and they collect data on a tablet, take down the species, the sizes, the damage is associated with the tree that is according to the FEMA guidelines, and then we assign a risk rating so that the community therefore can take that information and prioritize their work based on, is this a high priority or a low priority, and they can handle the response in that manner. We assessed 458 trees in Dayton and part of Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and Beaver Creek.
Wow, that's a lot of trees.
It was, but we had a great team of very dedicated volunteers is what they are, and they came down here and assessed the damage for the communities. And in Dayton, I mean, these communities are on top of it anyway, but they definitely appreciated an extra hand to help out, because it's you guys witnessed the devastation.
Yeah, I've gone into those neighborhoods. I've been, you know, where it's been hardest hit. And it is sad. Not only are the houses and the, you know, lives torn apart there, but to see our trees damaged the way that they are, it does make me feel kind of good that we have specialists that are going in there and saying, okay, this tree, while it looks bad, doesn't necessarily need to come down. Because I wouldn't know. I would think, I better take that down and make that some firewood right now.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, that's really, really interesting. Do you, I don't know if you know these numbers off the top of your head or any sort of ballpark, but like, did the Dayton area have a lot of high risk trees, or you know what I mean? Like, do you know anything a little bit deeper about?
We handed the data over to Data, and I'm not sure how, I didn't do any summary of it before, because like I said, they're pretty on top of it. They have their own GIS specialists and urban foresters, very qualified urban foresters. So they definitely took the data, and they were ready to go out and work on. They had done a lot of work already. Mm-hmm. It's just they were ready to go out the following week with a contractor to go and handle some of these.
Waiting for that official process, as you were mentioning. Probably.
No, not at all. They were out there the day
doing
after. And that's the thing. I mean, you have to, you know, clear your right of ways and make sure that there's nothing safe. But the thing is, like, what you'll see in some of the trees that when we were out there is, they were hangers, like branches broken off and still hanging the tree, whereas right after that happens, they might be hard to see because the leaves are, I mean, sometimes the canopies are still full and full of leaves, green leaves, and all of a sudden they start turning brown. That's when you can see them.
Yeah, yes. And you're like, oh, there's a huge
gotta go take care of that one.
I mean, especially on a broad swath like this was, I mean, it's, you're looking at a lot of trees, and a lot of the initial assessments are these drive-bys where you're really triaging the area and just getting the worst of the worst.
Ones that you can visually just see right away.
Exactly, yeah, and you don't have someone walking around the whole tree and looking at every part of the canopy, and that's when you get really detailed and say, oh, did you see that right there? And you enter that data in, and that is really helpful to the community, because it might take them, you know, another couple weeks to get there.
Yeah. I think it's important if you own a tree that you see something like that, that you should let the proper people know about that, because I think ahead into the winter time, you get a good ice storm, that could bring down one of those limbs and you know,
absolutely,
that could cause more damage to your property.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and so let me clarify this too. The strike team, we only look at public trees, so only the trees between the curb and the sidewalk and park trees. So we aren't necessarily,
you're not in homes.
If we do see a private property tree that can affect the right-of-way, that could be risky to people in the right-of-way, that's definitely some data we collect for them. But as far as the homeowner, going back to hiring a certified arborist or getting a consultant to come in to come look at their trees, and being certified, I think, is very important too, because they've shown that they've taken the initiative to get further education and skill in our industry, and be able to take that to your property is way better than having someone that is just
come there and tear it down.
Removing trees are expensive.
Oh yeah.
So if you can hire someone that knows what they're talking about, that can say like, hey, actually your tree's totally salvageable, or we can do this process to save it.
Absolutely.
You are going to save yourself money
as
well. So, you know, that's something to think about. You may think like, well, just cut it down. That's a lot of money. So it may be worth your time to just pay the arborist to come and give you maybe a little bit better news than you would have expected.
Absolutely.
Wow, I did not know all of that about the trees being evaluated after the tornado. That's like very, very
And this was our first deployment. Like I said, we did a mock disaster in Toledo in 2016, and I did a team leader training out in Connecticut in 17. We didn't do much in 18, and then this hit, and it was like, well, we've got this ready to go. Let's deploy them. Yeah. So this is our first deployment. I think it was very successful, and I think we got got our feet underneath us for when this happens next, because it's not if.
It's when.
No, it is when. Right. It is. It's most definitely when.
Sadly.
This is kind of a curveball question. You're like, oh man. obviously, our changing climate is something that everyone should be talking about. And I had listened to another podcast where someone had done a study about being able to plant more trees and how that can kind of help, just of course, with the air we breathe. But as we take trees down to build homes and expand, that we should be replacing them. So it's almost like touching back on our Arbor Day talk that we had last year.
Oh yeah.
But why is something like that important, and why we shouldn't just ignore, like, cut down the tree and just move on? Like, why is it important to kind of be replenishing the resources that we use?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, as far as sequestering carbon, I mean, that is absolutely, you know, one of the main greenhouse gases.
Right.
If we can have more trees, all the better.
They take it. Yes. They want it. We don't want it. The trees want it.
Yeah.
And so when you get into, like, you know, we use trees to build homes, furniture, I mean, it's our renewable natural resource. We utilize trees, and we should be utilizing trees. In our forests, if we can manage them properly, natural regeneration occurs. Trees are already in the understory growing up. When you harvest a tree that is utilized to build your home, another tree is coming up right in its place. Whereas in the urban areas, we don't have natural regeneration here.
Right.
We mow lawns, we mulch. I mean, it's just not something that happens.
Right.
So when you have something like this come through, it is imperative that we replant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only way we're going to get our urban canopy. And most would argue, not most, a lot of us would argue, the most important trees, a lot of us are urban guys.
Oh, so the tree guys. The tree guys.
The most important trees are the ones that are around us every day, these urban trees. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are the ones that are providing the shade, the cooling temperatures, sequestering the carbon, taking particulate matter out of the air that we're producing in our power plants and from our vehicles. Those are the trees that really affect us on a day-to-day level.
Yeah.
So like I said, when something like this comes through, to get out there and replant trees and have a canopy getting established again is very important for the livability of our communities.
Yeah. That is such a good point about the fact that, yes, we are in urban areas, we are in cities, mm-hmm. and those trees are basically a natural air filter to you. So we want
them. For us sitting right here.
No, I mean, it's very true. So it might not be something that you think about on a daily basis, but it is important to know that you've got a natural filter that's taking out, you know, when we have... like our ozone days, when we get really hot and we have to
air quality alert
and all that stuff. It's like, well, the more trees you have, like, that will help in those situations. Mm-hmm. So again, sorry, that was kind of a curveball.
No,
but
I
it was
that.
Something I was thinking about when you look at like the Google aerial images of all the canopy that got wiped out during that tornado outbreak. Mm-hmm. We want that canopy mm-hmm. back.
Absolutely.
We got to plant it to get it back. So.
But it doesn't necessarily mean you have to cut down the bad ones.
No,
just give it some time.
Give it some time, get it evaluated, and see what happens.
Yep.
I love it. All right, we're going to end real quick on your, I'm going to make you just say it again, talk about fall prediction for your colors.
So,
please, thank you.
I am predicting that you can find a beautiful area to see fall color this year, regardless of the weather, because there are areas in Ohio that, you know, have the soil moisture and have the conditions that are perfect for seeing vibrant, long-lasting fall colors this year. You just got to get out and find it. It's out there in our state parks, it's out there on our state forest lands, it's out there in our natural preserves. It's something that you just need to get outside and go check out. I predict another good fall color season in Ohio.
Yeah, and then timing of it for us?
Timing is definitely going to be pushed back because of the weather, so we're probably looking in the Dayton region end of October into the beginning of November for our fall color, for our peak fall color. And peak is kind of subjective.
Yeah.
So, you know, you might like this species that puts on this color. You might like this species. And those are different times of years. I like black gums. Mm-hmm. They're right at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
You know, so it's depending on what you like.
All right.
Excellent. Thank you so much,
Tyler. That was wonderful. Yeah, thanks for joining us again, Tyler.
Thank you.
Always great. And remember, if you want to listen or watch, we have more podcasts that McCall and I have been doing.
Right.
So you could download our WHO app, which is on our streaming device for Apple TV, Roku, as well as Amazon Fires, correct? Amazon? I think I got that.
Yes.
Okay. And then Google Play, Stitcher, WHIO.com, and Apple Podcasts to always listen to the episodes as well. So thanks so much for joining us, and thanks so much for listening.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.